Meeting of Parliament, 8 November 2016. Oath of Office of Minister for Justice, the Honourable Miliko.
I, Miliko Costa, do swear that the office of Minister with responsibility for justice, as a respected rule of law, defend the independence of the judiciary, and discharge my duties to ensure the provision of resources for the efficient and effective support of the court for which I am responsible, so help me God.
Order of the day, private members' motion, the Honourable D.A. Keaton.
Mr. Speaker, before I move on with my motion, may I congratulate the Honourable Member Neil Costa for his appointment as Minister for Justice and in just taking the oath. I have to say that it's a great pleasure that I see him doing so, who would have believed in 2005, when we were both doing cases together at the time, that I would be swearing that same oath, and that he would also be swearing that same oath shortly a few years afterwards. So, on behalf of the opposition, I congratulate the honourable member on his appointment. Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move the motion standing in my name, which reads as follows. This House notes that there are no overriding advantages for single-sex schools on educational grounds, acknowledges that there is a compelling case for the view that co-education provides a more realistic way of educating and training young people to take their places naturally in the wider community of men and women, acknowledges that education and ways to improve it must always remain at the top of the political agenda in this community, and debate on these issues is important, and calls on the government to generate that debate by undertaking a consultation exercise with teachers, the unions, parents, students, and other stakeholders to determine the views of the community on this issue. Mr. Speaker, at the outset of this debate, I would like to say that I recognize that there are studies that expound the benefits of both co-education and single-sex education, even if the balance, in my view, is in favour of the former. I'm also prepared to accept, for the purpose of this debate, that the interpretation of the results of studies in the private or public sectors in the United Kingdom and other countries has been hotly debated, resulting in varying policy recommendations based often on the same evidence. But I believe that there is a compelling case for co-education. And it's not surprising, Mr. Speaker, that over the last 20 years, the number of single-sex schools in the independent sector in the United Kingdom, in other words, what we term public schools, private schools, what we commonly call public schools, have actually halved in the last 20 years. And the time has come for us as a society to debate the issue, and the time has come for us to examine whether the decisions taken with the introduction of a comprehensive system in the 1970s to have single-sex comprehensive schools continues to be the best solution for secondary education in Gibraltar. And I hope that this debate on this motion starts that process, because, Mr. Speaker, there is no better investment than the investment in the education of our children, and anything that can be done, or can potentially be done, to improve that education is important and should be at the top of our collective agendas in this House. My motion, Mr. Speaker, does not seek to impose a view on this House, or anyone else for this matter. What it seeks to do is to generate and start what is a very important debate. But it is my view, Mr. Speaker, that there are excellent educational reasons for choosing co-education in a modern Gibraltar. They include the capacity to offer a wide range of subjects, equally to boys and girls at comprehensive. That is not only beneficial purely from the perspective of offering greater choice and the same choice to students of both sexes, but also helps to break down gender stereotypes when girls and boys see each other studying the same subject, particularly subjects which have traditionally been associated with girls or boys in the past. I also believe that education is much more than just the study of math or history or any other particular subject. It is also about educating and training young people to take their natural place in the wider community of men and women. Male and female students can learn from each other's perspective and approaches, learn to collaborate, each bringing their styles and opinions to bear in working together. This in itself is an important learning opportunity, in my opinion. It's about preparing young people for the realities of life, and the realities of life include men and women working together. It is not natural to segregate men and women, and it's not natural, in our view, to segregate girls and boys during their education. Indeed, we do not segregate girls and boys at junior or middle school, and we do not segregate ourselves from members of the opposite sex after we leave comprehensive school. The views of men and women and their different perspectives on life enrich society, and I believe that diversity would enrich secondary classrooms and better prepare students to move in the real world. In many respects, Mr. Speaker, the segregation of girls and boys at comprehensive schools was a response to a very peculiar set of circumstances that existed in the 1970s that do not exist today, or at the very least, need to be re-examined today. And I will make that out by referring, Mr. Speaker, to the Cloister Report of July 1974, which is a report produced during the time that Mr. Speaker was a member of the then AACR government. And Mr. Speaker, to understand the Cloister Report, and I think it's important for the House to understand it, one has to start by putting it into context. The Cloister Report was a report that was commissioned as a consequence of recommendations and a visit by Mr. Cloister, an education advisor, in June of 1973. And this is what the report says about Mr. Cloister's visit to Gibraltar and what he had to say. Although Mr. Cloister's main purpose, look at page 2 for any of the members that have a copy of the report. Although Mr. Cloister's main purpose in visiting Gibraltar was to consider the proposed procedure for the implementation of the decision to develop a single comprehensive school on two different sites, he came to the conclusion that it was necessary to reassess the validity of the principle of co-education in the light not only of educational desirability and practicability, but also of the state of public opinion. So in other words, Mr. Speaker, at the time in 1973, the decision had been taken in principle to have two comprehensive schools in Gibraltar, but they were going to be co-education schools. And Mr. Cloister came to Gibraltar in order to advise on whether that was the appropriate model going forward. Mr. Collister went on, and I read from the report, page 3 at the top. Mr. Collister went on to observe that as yet, co-education did not appear to be fully acceptable to society. He formed the opinion that although the majority of the members of Gibraltar Teachers Association were in favour of co-education, there was still great and natural apprehension on the part of parents whose traditional background was that of single-sex education. He therefore recommended the postponement of the proposed introduction of co-education in 1974. But presumably, on the basis of his view, in 1972-74, I think it was the first comprehensive intake, there was a boys' comprehensive and a girls' comprehensive. But what he recommended was that the matter be re-examined by a working group. And the terms of reference of the working group were as follows, and I'm reading from the top of page 1 for anybody that wants to follow. The terms of reference of the working party, as published in the official notice on the 12th of January 1974, were as follows. Quote, to make a commendation to government as to whether secondary education would in future be organised on co-educational lines on a junior high, senior high school basis, or continue in the present system of two single-sex separate schools. Any recommendation for change would not take effect until the session of 1976-77 at the earliest, end of quote. And we see that. The options that the Collister Working Group were considering is set out at page 6 of the report, at point 2. And school options, and it basically says, we outline the following four options, stating that the Working Party considered options 1 and 4 as being the most suitable for the bill. And option 1 was one girls' school, one boys' school, option 2. One girls' school, one boys' school, one sixth form co-ed. Option 3, one co-ed school in the north, another in the south. Option 4, one co-ed school split on two sites. And basically those were the options that were being considered. And if you see that, the first thing that the Collister group did was conduct a very extensive consultation exercise with the public, which I advocate ought to be the approach in the first instance of the government, and which I am inviting the House to agree in the form of my motion. And at page 9 of the Collister report, one can see the type of consultation exercise that was undertaken, and also the results which I am about to set out for the benefit of this House. Page 9 at the top, 4, public opinion. In our endeavour, the report says, to inform public opinion about the main issues involved, we publish 4 fact sheets and 2 opinion or information sheets. A case for co-education and a case for single-sex education. These were published in local newspapers and BBC radio and television, and copies were distributed to parents through the schools discussing the subject were held on television. We believe that it may be safely stated that the public was well and truly placed, that the matter was well and truly placed before the public. The public was then invited to make written or oral representations to the Working Party. And these are the results, Mr. Speaker. And the Speaker outside in the lobby told me about the consultation exercise that the government has undertaken. So these are the results of the consultation exercise. Teachers' opinion. The rate of response from teachers is 65%. There were 212 replies. Of the teachers who responded, 67.5% were in favour of a change to co-education, 32.5% in favour of single-sex education. So the teachers were overwhelmingly supportive of co-education. Parents' opinion. The rate of response from parents was between 40 and 45%. In other words, Mr. Speaker, less than 50% of parents responded to the consultation exercise. But there were still 2,560 replies, quite a lot of replies. Of those parents who responded, 37.7% were in favour of co-education, 60.8% were in favour of single-sex education, and 1.5% were undecided. So parents, although it was less than 50% of respondents, were overwhelmingly in favour of senior steps that he says, people's opinion. The rate of response was 80% of the secondary school enrollment. That's very high. There were 1,171 replies. Of those people who responded, 54.3% were in favor of co-education, the majority. 24.2% were in favor of single-sex education, and 21.5% were undecided. It's student opinion. Only 86% were from people. Of these, 75.6% were in favor of co-education, 18.6% were in favor of single-sex education, and 5.8% were undecided. So it's safe to say that in the consultation exercise that was undertaken in 1974, the majority of those that were consulted were in favour of co-education. And those that were against, really the only body that were against, was opposed, of which 40 to 45% were responded to the study, but those were the only group that was against co-education in favour of single-sex education. Indeed, that's reflected as well in the resolution. First, there was a resolution that was passed by the Devoted Teachers Association on the 20th of May 1974, which read as follows. Having made an up-to-date study of educational research and practice in European countries, this association continues to be committed to co-education as a better matrix from which the community of Gibraltar can develop, end quote. And my understanding, I'll be corrected if I'm wrong by my honourable friend to my right, is a resolution that continues, in fact, to have effect and continues to be the position of the Gibraltar Teaching Association to this day. And then there was a rival resolution, which is a resolution by the Gibraltar Parents Association on the 25th of April 1974, and it read as follows: that single-sex education at secondary school level be retained. And then it says there's a write-up to that resolution, and it says it follows, quote, it was generally agreed by the association that it would be prudent to allow for changes in the future when deciding on the type of building to be erected, end quote. And let's speak up. The recommendation of the Forrester report, as we all know, was that at the time we continued with the recently introduced comprehensive system on a single sex basis with two separate schools. And the reasons were as follows, Mr. Speaker. I pick it up at page 14 under the title Comprehensive Education. And it says this, and this is really one of the main reasons, if not the main reason, why the Collister Report recommended that we continue with single-sex education. It reads as follows. It can be represented to us, and we accept it, that the change to a comprehensive system in Gibraltar, while desired by the majority in all sectors of opinion, was introduced too quickly and without adequate planning and preparation. This has led to a number of problems in the practical working of the system, in the words of Mr. Collister, a highly sophisticated and complex organism, which those concerned are doing their best to overcome. Apart from this aspect, however, we consider that the system, which is a relatively young one, even in Britain, should be given a chance to develop over the next few years to the point at which genuine comprehensive education is fully available in the world. And it continues, we therefore consider that it would be wrong to impose upon the educational structure, as it is at present, a further radical change, which even if there were not a substantial body of opinion against it, would be bound to present further difficulties and problems in administration, organization, training, and assimilation. In other words, this is an education system that had just been introduced in comprehensive system. It needed bedding down. But of course, that, which was the main reason in 1974, is no reason at all in 2016. And also, the second reason is this. It talked about the options, and then it said, we have, however, found considerable opposition to option 4. I remind us that option 4 was two comprehensive schools on co-educational principles on two different sites in Gibraltar. Objection for one educational school split on two sites. The fourth major objection was to the creation of one school for as many as 2,000 pupils, with all the problems of administration and organization, as well as the difficulties in establishing personal relationships and some feeling of belonging which would arise. Equally cogent was the argument that the physical division was likely to perpetuate the notion of a privileged class of pupils who would move on to the upper school, and indeed that such division might display some pupils from staying at school after reaching the age of 15. In other words, it was felt to be divisive to have two schools on co-educational grounds in different sites of the world, that one could develop as a reputation for being better than the other, and that it would just simply lead to elitism. Again, it's not a reason, in my respectful view, that can possibly apply today. And then it says, start. We have referred above to the need for the fuller orientation of teachers if a true comprehensive system is to be established. While it would no doubt be possible to take at least some steps to remedy the need for training, etc., before 1977-78, we believe again that it would be unwise to attempt to do so while the difficult process of adaptation to the comprehensive system remains incomplete. And in fourth, the fourth reason was that a majority of parents were against it in Gibraltar. That was the fourth reason that was provided. And the reason to summarize at paragraph 21, sorry, page 21 at the very top, when the working group reported as follows: co-education should not be introduced in Gibraltar at least until A. present problems are overcome and a truly comprehensive system is fully established. B. public opinion is in favour. C. adequate specific and long-term preparation of teaching staff is possible. And D. two separate co-educational schools are no longer regarded as potentially divisive in social or academic terms. Mr. Speaker, I believe that the time has come for this issue to be reopened. I believe that the time has come for a working group on the lines of the Collister working group to be set up today in order to look at this particular issue. And I believe that above all, Mr. Speaker, the time has come to have profound engagement with parents, with the union, with students, and with all relevant stakeholders in order to see whether public opinion, the opinions that were expressed in 1974 and so informed the decision of the Collister group and working party at the time, are still public opinions that prevail today. Mr. Speaker, I doubt it very much, and I believe that public opinion in Gibraltar would be very much in favour of co-education. I believe that the time has come to be progressive on this issue, the time has come to look forward on this issue, and the time has come for us all to embrace a modern outlook to co-education, and the starting point, Mr. Speaker, is the setting up of a working group, and the starting point, Mr. Speaker, is engagement with the public in order to have a proper debate in relation to this issue. Mr. Speaker, I commend the motion to the House.
I now propose the question in the terms of the motion moved by the Honourable Mr. Speaker. Does any member wish to speak on the motion? The Honourable David McGoon.
Mr. Speaker, I've listened attentively to the Honourable Member. Essentially, what he has done is recite the 1974. And come to the conclusion that he doesn't agree with the conclusion of the 1970 report. But he has set out his case based on that report, only to say the report leads to the wrong conclusion, although proposal I gave notice by letter to Mr. Speaker of a proposed amendment to the motion, which I will come to in a moment when I move the amendment. At the moment, I'm just replying to the Honourable Member, but I am referring to the text of the amended motion which was provided to the Honourable Member, which sets out, and I will go into much further detail later, that a working group has already been set up. And for the Honourable Member to come with a prepared speech and say, you should be doing what you are already doing, when he knows we're already doing it, because the report that I have read up almost in its entirety from 1970 was wrong, simply to ignore the reality of what is going on today in education in the region. But Mr. Speaker, I want to start my contribution to this debate by setting out the government's position and setting it out as clearly as I can. This is certainly my own personal position when I was Minister for Education, and it is the government's position as a whole. And it is quite simply and quite clearly that we have an open mind. The government does not currently have a firm view on whether secondary education in Gibraltar will continue to be offered in a single-sex school or in a collegiate educational environment. So we have an open mind, and in fact, I have had that open mind, and I have been discussing with professionals at the Department of Education since December 2011, when we were first elected into government, and I took over the education portfolio. So this is not a debate that is new. This is a debate that has been going on for some time, and yes, we do have that open mind. But having said that, Mr. Speaker, one thing is absolutely clear. Even though we have an open mind, we must not change for the sake of change. There must be good reasons. There must be sound educational arguments and certain educational reasons for co-education, for a change strategy, to introduce co-education to be made. It is worth noting, and I recall a few weeks ago a contributor to the letter column in the Gibraltar Chronicle, who wrote specifically on this subject, having heard the Honourable Member saying that he was going to propose a motion on co-education. And then referring in that letter to the results, the good results that we get from both Bayside and Westside, he simply said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So what we have is a system that by and large works well. And of course the system can be improved. And we have made improvements to the system. We are constantly looking at ways in which to improve our children's education. And we have done so. We have removed inequalities which existed during all the time that the DOD was in office. Because the Honourable Member, in his contribution, says there are excellent educational reasons for going forward, having premised his argument by saying that there is a compelling, he feels that there is a compelling case for co-education. And he proclaims there are excellent education reasons. And I patiently hope to hear those excellent educational reasons. In fact, I thought we were going to get a list of those excellent educational reasons. We've got one matter. One point was made, and that is all that was made in respect of the excellent educational reason for going co-educational. Just one in his entire contribution. Greater choice of subjects. So he wasn't done. Greater choice of subjects. And then he went on to talk of social reasons, like preparing young people for life in an environment where people are going to be mixing male and female, and we should do that. But those are social reasons. But when he said excellent co-educational reasons, I really wanted to hear what they were. Because it's important for the debate, not just because I wanted to have the benefit of hearing that. Greater choice of subject. The Honourable Member will know that during his time in office, there was less choice of subject in our comprehensive school. The Honourable Member will know that they had a system in place whereby for GCSE, where students did not get the grades that they wanted. There was one system for West Side and a different system for Bayside, whereby West Side students were offered the opportunity of a repeat year, of those who wanted to improve their grades at GCSE level, being able to stay on for that extra year at GCSE level and do repeat of some of the subjects that they wanted to improve in, plus a couple of additional subjects which were offered to be done in that particular year. And that is just for West Side and not for Bayside. And that is just during their time. Now I say, what on earth has that got to do? That has to do with choice of subjects. Of course, that has to do with choice of subjects. It has to do with ability to opt for a certain improvement and have subject choice at school. There was a choice to be made at West Side, but no choice to be made at Bayside. During their time, we corrected them. And as a matter of policy, I gave an instruction that that had to be corrected and a repeat of facility had to be introduced in Bayside. And we did it. And it exists. It now coexists in both schools. That choice of subject, that opportunity is available in both schools because we did it, not because they did it. But when the Honourable Member talks of excellent educational reasons and choice of subjects, I have to ask myself, particularly on that example that I've given, some inequality that existed on West Side and Bay Side, what on earth has that got to do with gender? What on earth has that got to do with whether the school is single sex or mixed sex, or mixed school? Or is it that somebody decided at some stage we're only going to do this for West Side because they are gay? It's got nothing to do with a gender argument. It's got nothing to do with a mixed school argument. It's got nothing to do with a single school argument. All it has to do is that somebody at some point decided that in West Side they were going to introduce this facility. Not because they were gay, but they were going to do it in West Side and not in Bayside. The same could have happened if it had been co-educational. It would have happened in one school and not in the other. And we introduced it in the other, so that everybody across the board, in Gibraltar, regardless of sex, regardless of gender, regardless of whether you're in a single school environment or a mixed school environment, has the same choice. And we did the same again this year, in particular, having started working on it previously, with A-level subjects. Something that the Honourable Members have been talking on us about for some time and have been asking me for some time. And asking me, in the knowledge, that the inequality that existed in choice of subject between Bayside and West Side existed during their time, and they did precious little to correct it. It fell to us to put in a new system. It fell to us to put in a new system which I announced and which has now been fully implemented, whereby the whole list of options at secondary level, which is available in Gibraltar, is offered to everyone, regardless of whether you're a boy or a girl, regardless of whether you're a Bayside and in West Side. And I explain the reason why, in some cases, some subjects are offered in one school and not in the other. And one of the reasons I explained was demand, numbers. If we had 5 students wanting to do a particular subject, a class of 10, does it make sense to have that subject replicated in 2 schools, particularly where, in a particular subject, there may be issues with subject specialization and availability of subject specialists, whereby if they are released or if they are used in both schools to teach that subject, they may not be released to teach other things or to do other things at different levels. And we introduce a system to create that greater choice across the board. But again, that has absolutely nothing to do with whether you're a boy or a girl, which school you attend to. It so happens that certain schools have certain demand and certain subject specialists, and those subjects were offered in that particular school, whether it was Bayside or West Side. The same could have happened in a co-educational environment. So this is quite simply a red herring. Greater choice of subjects. So does one of the members think that because we've got co-education in both schools, that necessarily has to mean that a subject in which there is little demand has to be offered in both schools the same, just because it's co-education, and co-education fixes everything? But it doesn't. Quite simply, if there is co-education and you've got a subject in one particular school, whoever wants to do that subject goes to that school. It's not as if they have to travel from Penzance to the Isle of Wight, to do that school, that they had to travel barely a kilometer more to go from one school to the other. So whether you go to one school in Jamaica or not isn't really the issue. And we've introduced a scheme whereby if you're a boy and you see subjects which are offered in Westside, you go to Westside. And that seems to be working well. So in effect, we have introduced co-education not by policy or by design for the sake of co-education, but through the element of subject choice, which is the one sound or the only excellent educational reason which the honourable member is able to come up with in terms of the reason for the compelling case on co-education. So, Mr. Speaker, the bottom line is no change for the sake of change. We must be satisfied that there are, the honourable member is right in this, we must be satisfied as to the educational reasons that exist, that the education argument exists to make that change necessary or desirable. That must be, and that is, the government's starting position. Having said that, Mr. Speaker, of course we acknowledge that there is a debate to be had. There is a debate going on, much in Jamaica, but elsewhere, in relation to co-education. And because we acknowledge that there is a debate to be had, is the reason why we have initiated the debate. So the honourable member, when he comes and says we bring this motion in order to initiate the debate, seems to ignore what we said in our last manifesto. Precisely on this issue, whereby in the forward on the section of education, he says, and I quote, is co-education a good or bad idea for the comprehensive school? We ask the question, is co-education a good or bad idea? Part of the debate, a manifesto provision. And it goes on to say, this must also be reviewed dispassionately and on a non-partisan basis by experts. So we have initiated the debate. And we do clearly acknowledge that it needs to be looked at by experts. There is obviously a consultation process to be carried out. But of course, we also have to acknowledge that this is not a new debate. This is not something that is springing out of the air as if nothing has existed before. Well, the member has referred to a 1970 recall, only to dismiss the conclusion as I said. It may be said that circumstances change, views change, and what may have been looked at in the 1970s may not be entirely relevant today. So the other member, referring to the report of 1974, said that in 1972, the decision had been made, in principle, to have two comprehensive schools which should be co-ed. As I understood the other member, and he said that in fact what then happened was that we continued with single-sex education at comprehensive level. If that comprehensive school on a single-sex basis had been introduced before that, it started in 1972. The Linares and myself were part of the first intake at Bayside, the very first intake. 1972, September 1972, was the very first intake for the comprehensive school, and we were the first group in Bayside on that year. But it wasn't anything new. Bayside took over a school which was already a secondary school. The Lord School was housed in that particular building. And that, as I recall, was a boys' school. We also had the grammar school, which was a boys' school. We also had St. Xavier's, which was a boys' school. All the three comprehensive systems, and then we had a Loretta system for the girls. So it wasn't a comprehensive system that was working, and it was decided that that should be the start of this division and the creation of single-sex education in Georgia. That decision, that and what happened at the time, was simply a continuation at a comprehensive level, in a comprehensive environment, of single-sex education at secondary level, which already existed in Georgia. And yes, it is true that a debate was had in the 1970s. And yet it is true that a debate has continued, not just now, it's continued throughout the years. The honorable member, I don't know if he is aware, during the time of the GOP methods, a decision was actually made by the GOP to go to Rome. I don't know if he's aware of that. The government of which he was part, not to form, as he is suggesting, a decision to go to Rome, was made by the GOP administration. And in the 1970s, the report of the honorable member has referred to, also talks of the working group. The GOP itself set up a committee to look at this, but not to look at whether co-education should be introduced, but on the basis of a decision had been taken by the previous administration to actually bring in co-education, and the committee was simply set up to advise on implementation measures, how it was to be done. And that happened in 1976. And that committee produced an interim report. And the interim report started by saying, 2006. The GOP had not even been conceived at that time. 2006, there was an interim report headed co-education at secondary level. Paragraph 1. Following government commitment to introduce co-education at secondary level, a steering committee was set up to recommend to government on the way of implementing such a move. This is a decision that was taken at the time by the GOP administration, admittedly, before the honorable member was a member of the government. But by 2007, he was a member of the government. I'm not sure why he wasn't pushing this agenda. He would have been pushing up an open door. A decision had already been made. A steering committee had already been set up and made recommendations to the government. All that was needed was the Minister for Education to be tasked with implementing that procedure. And that would have happened at the time that the honorable member was in office. As a minister of the government, or didn't he know what the rest of the government was doing? Perhaps they didn't have cabinet discussions as we do on a regular basis, and no one knew what the other was doing. That's a certainly question that we get. So, this interim report actually missed advantages in keeping its single-sex schools at secondary level. And it missed disadvantages in keeping single-sex schools at secondary level. And even then, one of the items used, which the reasons I discussed previously, I dispute as a reason as to whether to maintain single sex or go co-ed. One of the reasons is the current system is inflexible in respect of subject choices offered to students. That's in the 2006 report. So in 2006, the GOP itself was acknowledging it had an inflexible system in terms of subject choice. And they seemed to think that the answer was co-education. They didn't think to use co-education and didn't fix the issue of subject choice. We did without introducing co-education. And the report ends by saying these interim proposals are presented for consideration by the Minister in order A, to encourage further discussion of a different direction, or B, accept present recommendations and request detailed proposals. But the premise of this report was that the following government commitment to introduce co-education at the secondary level. So there's two governments. that made this decision and decided, or who I really don't know this decision, but decided that it would not go ahead and implement co-education, even though there was an interim report which already set out. It seems that that is where that ended, at least at that time, before more modern times. It appears that a decision was taken much too soon, even though a commitment had apparently already been given, or at any rate, no decision to proceed was taken. But the matter didn't go ahead. So the honourable member comes to this house today with a motion seeking to generate a debate. And he sets out his own view in seeking to generate that debate, and that includes his own view that there is a compelling case. And Mr. Speaker, one of the main problems with the honourable member's motion, it seems to me that it is intrinsically contradictory, is that it starts, this House notes that there are no overriding advantages for single-sex schools on co-educational grounds. So the honourable member is asking this House to generate a debate, but to answer the question before the debate is happening. To know that there are no overriding advantages for single-sex schools. To come to that conclusion today. That's what the honourable member is seeking this House to do. And then to generate a debate. He's like putting the cart before the horse. Because then in the second paragraph he says, acknowledging that there is a compelling case for the view that co-education provides a more realistic way of educating and training young people. So he asks the House to acknowledge that there is a compelling case. So if we know that there is no advantage to single-sex education, and we acknowledge that there is a compelling case for co-education, why didn't we do it? That would be the end of the debate, one would have thought. This House having resolved that this is a good idea, this is good for Gibraltar, this is good for young people in terms of their education and their training. And if we resolve that, then we simply have to talk about implementation, not about generating a debate. This is what the honourable member is then asking in the motion that we should do. So it seems to us that it is inconsistent for Parliament to be asked to take a particular view and then simply to call for a debate. I say, Mr. Speaker, because we do not believe that the honourable member's motion sets out a proper, a valid, or realistic position for this House to take, we are, and I am proposing in particular, an amendment to the motion. Mr. Speaker, I would draw your attention to a letter of the 13th of October, which I sent to Mr. Speaker, asking, indicating that I will be moving an amendment to this particular motion by removing the words after the title and replacing them with a text which appears attached to the letter. In the text of the amended motion, the part would read like this. This House acknowledges that education and ways to improve it must always remain at the top of the political agenda in the community. Note that there are educational arguments both in favour and against co-education for the voice of co-education comprehensive schools. Note that the GSC Liberals manifesto for the 2015 election posed the question whether co-education is a good idea or a bad idea for the comprehensive schools, and provided a commitment to review this dispassionately and on a non-partisan basis by experts. Acknowledges that in keeping with this commitment, the government has already set up a working group made up of teachers, officials of the Department of Education, union officials, and parents to report to the government by March 2017 on co-education for the comprehensive schools, with the following terms of reference. 1. To advise the government of Gibraltar on the advantages and disadvantages of the current and mixed co-education model for the comprehensive schools in Gibraltar. 2. To make recommendations on whether secondary education at the comprehensive schools in recommendations on possible implementation scenarios. And four, to make recommendations on an appropriate consultation model to ensure that the views of the relevant stakeholders are taken into account. And note that the working group's report will form the basis of a consultation by the government with all relevant stakeholders before a decision is taken on whether co-education should be introduced in the comprehensive schools, and if so, in what form. So, you see, Mr. Speaker, we're not just generating the debate. We are acting on our commitment. We are acting on our view that there is a valid question to be posed, and that there is an analysis to be made, not just on a rhetorical or philosophical question in the sense of this mixed school, but whether it is good or bad for Gibraltar. The other member in his contribution also highlighted the fact that in the UK, those comprehensive schools are mixed. So it is a fact that in the public sector in the UK, there are quite a number of mixed co-education schools. And when you said one school serving a particular borough, and that borough necessarily has boys and girls, you have to have a school that caters for the children in that borough, rather than two different schools in the same sector, in the same region. The position has traditionally been different in development. But certainly there are things that need to be different. Firstly, is it good or is it bad idea for development? Does it work, and how is it going to be worked then? So we have to have a working group and with a realistic time scale and what I consider to be a rather short time scale. We've asked the working group to report by the end of March 2017 so that then any consultation process can be looked at. The working group will need to advise the government on the type of consultation that would be carried out. And one of the terms of reference is also to look at implementation models, if indeed co-education is recommended. And that is because there are a number of practical and infrastructural issues to be considered. We'll have to look at if and when co-education is introduced, at what level, is it introduced at sixth form level, and after this, is it introduced at sixth form level initially, and then working down. There are issues of capital failure. There are issues of the fact, as I indicated, when we used it to baseline as a comprehensive, first comprehensive intake, it was already a boys' school. And I don't know whether it was originally designed as a boys' school, but certainly it looked like a boys' school because there weren't facilities for boys and for girls. Toilet facilities, shower facilities, these are practical issues that have to be looked at. You can't just decide overnight, let's go correct and put the fingers and it happens. The other practical issue is whatever model is used or recommended, if indeed co-education is recommended, is that there are examination cycles. And there will be boys and girls who have already started on that cycle, the year 2 year cycle. And what you cannot do is to stop that cycle. So you start from the top down, so fifth form, you start from the bottom up, eighth form, you certainly can't do, is change your 10 and 11, where they're already involved in a cycle of education, geared for certain exams. So there are clearly matters to be considered, a multitude of issues to be considered. Practical and infrastructural issues, compensatory issues, as well as the educational issues, which are what has to be at the core of the decision in the first place. Now, the fifth issue, and the Honourable Member has alluded to this, that there are some educators, educators and professionals in the field who do feel that there is a compelling case for education. And others feel precisely the opposite. And both sides argue, and both sides advantages and disadvantages in favor of their case. The debate has really been quite polarized, one way or the other. The position and the reason why the government has this open mind is precisely because it is not an open and shut case. And that is evident from all the studies that have been carried out. And I've had the advantage, very useful advantage, of being provided with a thesis dated April 2016, from this precise year, by Christopher Cortez, happens to be nephew of our current Minister for Education. Christopher Cortez, a teacher at Bayside, at the Department of Music, was given a sabbatical in order to do a Master of Science in Education in the United States. And the basis of that Master of Science was a master's project culminating in a thesis. The title of the thesis was The Perceived Impact of Single Gender Instruction in Catholic Schools in the Ecclesiastical Province of Cincinnati. So, although the title relates to Catholic schools, it's about the impact of single gender education. And essentially, what this was a master's thesis on the single sex of the mixed school debate. And what Mr. Cortez has done is drawn a multitude of studies, both in the US and internationally, precisely on this issue. And one of the reasons why this is particularly useful is that it reflects current thinking. It reflects modern studies that have been carried out internationally. Which looks at that in the clearness of the position in Gibraltar, but informs the debate as to educational thinking on the current debate of single sex versus mixed school environment. And one of the things that Mr. Professor says in his thesis is to ask the question, do teachers perceive single sex classrooms to be effective? Do they believe that gender separation can have a positive or negative impact on student development? What are their opinions about gender-based instruction? Do they consider single-sex pedagogy useful when they're instructing students? Those are the basic questions that were asked as part of this study. And what he does in this, and quoting from his report, is provide an overview of multiple studies that have been designed to test whether single-sex instruction has had an impact on student achievement, self-efficacy, behavior, or other important educational and social factors. The research contains an equal number of sources that support and reject single-sex, single-gender classes in schools. And just to give a flavor of the elements of the research that exists and which are quoted in this master's thesis. Because they wrote a 2011 study where they explicitly stated that research on the benefits of single gender pedagogy was inconclusive. A 2012 study where they stated the differences found between single sex and co-education learning were insignificant. Fairly recent study, 2012. Another 2011 study where they concluded the differences in academic achievement in single sex schools had more to do with single student selection and peer quality than gender. 2009 study, where they concluded that single sex pedagogy was beneficial to foreign language courses, especially for males. 2008, where they stated that although research regarding single sex was largely inconclusive, there was conclusive evidence to show that it was beneficial for girls and minorities. 2006 study, it stated that single-sex pedagogy was highly recommended. 2008 study, where it stated that multiple studies had shown that single-sex education was extremely useful in raising the achievement levels of students. There is one thing clear about all these studies, is that the research is essentially inconclusive. if you want to argue one particular way and find out people who serve by professional educators, by people in the field who have carried out proper analysis, you'll be able to find something that supports your point of view. And you'll equally be able to support something that supports the other end of the spectrum. And you'll equally be able to support something that says everything is inconclusive. So we have research that suggests that everything is inconclusive. The differences between single sex and co-education models being insignificant, to single sex education raising achievement levels. And therefore, what seems to me that this demonstrates is that there is no compelling case, one way or the other. But the issue that really falls to be determined, the issue that we need to decide, yes, having regard to all these international studies and what educators around the world have already done and considered and are reviewing, is this still a good idea for today? Is this something that is going to improve our current system? We have a system that delivers very good results, excellent results. We all come out in August congratulating our team and our teachers and the schools and the effort and the parents and the effort that everybody makes in achieving the results of the SP intervention. We have a system that works. Should we change that? By all means, we should change that if there are good reasons for change. Good educational reasons for change. So, at the end of the day, Mr. Speaker, we are talking of a debate which is quite simply a perennial debate. And it is time. It is a debate that is charged with emotional arguments on both sides. And we have many top teachers and experts ultimately believing that there are more important factors that influence the quality of education than, in fact, gender issues. And there are strong pros and cons to both single sex and for mixed schools. And the case between for educational or mixed school or single sex schooling certainly is something that could have important implications for young people in terms of the academic, the psychological, and the social development. That is something that we acknowledge. And what we should not do is quite simply restrict the debate to simply academic performance. That is something that we should not do. If we do that, it would appear to save the goal in a single sex environment. But that is not the end of the story, because the reality is certainly much more complex. We have academic performance, which is also linked not just to gender, but the quality of the school, the leadership in a particular school, the quality of the other teaching, and it is also in a strictly linked to the support that students receive at home. That is an important message that we also have to write through. Children on all levels receiving good support at home. There are, in debate, and certainly the arguments to debate itself, a number of factors that can be considered, which are both shown, the advantages and disadvantages of single sex and co-education. And when we look through a list of factors, it is difficult at this stage at least to come to a conclusion that one is better than the other. And it is possible to come to a conclusion that neither is best. But we still have to find what the best model is for debating. One of the factors to be considered at a debater level is the debater college. When co-education is in a major way. And certainly there have been no detrimental effects on that. Now we have, as I already explained, a system that operates on the premise that it can work on a mixed gender basis because of the introduction of wider subject choice for everybody. So we already have that. And the issues, as I've already alluded to, may well not be simply do we do it, but how do we do it? And there are infrastructure issues, tactical issues, for example, restaurant. There are differences in the two schools, kitchen, difference in the two schools, toilet, and shower facilities, which currently do not cater for both boys and girls. We can go through a list of advantages and disadvantages. It doesn't lead us to any particular conclusion. So what is necessary, and what we feel was the right way to proceed, was to consider the issue for Gibraltar, to look at the system that exists in Gibraltar at the moment, to put together a working group, as we have done already, to report to the government by March 2017 on whether, as a matter of principle, we should proceed on a pure educational basis for that, and whether, if we do so, or what, if any, changes to be made at the school level, at the second level, department of education level, captain failure level, there is a plethora of issues to be considered. But all that, Mr. Speaker, is encapsulated in the amended motion, which recognizes that we have already initiated that debate, which recognizes that there are arguments both in favor and against the education, which recognizes that we have already made inroads by setting up the working group, but which recognizes that we have given some of reference to that working group, which I will examine not just to come up with a question of if, but how, and also for the working group to advise on the consultation that is best to be carried out in the water. Speaker, for all those in this, I commend the amended motion to the House.
Does any honourable member wish to speak on the amendment proposed by the honourable Mr. Gilbert Nicholson? I think all of the members have a copy of the amendment. Honourable Roy Clinton.
Mr. Speaker, this debate is very likely the honourable minister has a place for anyway. It's taken a long time, as far as I'm aware, for it to be discussed openly in the past. And I think quite there are arguments for and against, and this is precisely why we should be having this debate. I personally welcome the creation of a working group. However, I must admit, I think I missed the government press release announcing the data approach of this working group and who the members of this working group are. I'm opening this motion because it's made up of teachers, officials of the Department of Education, union officials and parents, but which union and which parent and which school? Only one union. I say this, that's the issue. Well, I'm saying, Mr. Speaker, is this working group that is obviously such an important group with the world determining the educational future of our children, we don't even know who the members of this group are. I'm about to ask the Minister if he would at least publish the name of the members of this working group. Well, because, Mr. Speaker, otherwise this, unfortunately, because we're not told, the public's not told, when this group is set up and who's members are, we can only conclude that this group is meeting in secret. I mean, the secret committee. Well, we may laugh. We may laugh, but we don't know the members of this group that is determining a very important educational decision. We can only conclude that this secret group is set up by the minister. I hear sighs from the opposite side of this house. But we all find laughs, sighs, or groans, whichever. But, Mr. Speaker, the actual original working group, the Policy Working Group, which published their report in 1974, everybody knew who the members of this working group were. People could talk to them. People could write things to them. They invited consultation. Your working group is going to make recommendations on very important matters to the government, but the public don't even know who they are. So, Mr. Speaker, my first premise would be, I think it would be only a courtesy to the community, the minister to actually issue a press release to the public stating that he has set up a working group on whatever basis was. Well, I certainly hope it predates the base of my learned colleague's motion to look into these matters and when we send the reference for actually issue. And Mr. Speaker, I know looking at his amendments to the motion, and this is where I will take a view, not from the point of view of the education minister, not from the point of view of the unions, or the parents, or government, or the opposition, but the students themselves. My learned colleague, in his motion, at least part of courtesy, include the word students. The minister's working group doesn't include them. Probably the very people that we are going to affect the most are not even part of the working group, apart from those who can correct me if I'm wrong, and that there are no students represented in this working group, which is a very important working group considering the future of education in the border. And they are the most affected parties, and they certainly have a real interest. And Mr. Speaker, with your indulgence, I actually found an education handbook from the Gibraltar Teachers Association from 1985-86. And to my surprise, I found in there an address from the 1985 International Year of the Youth. And it was addressed by its former, and I will quote, this is from 1985, which is more than 30 years ago. I quote, "It is frustrating to see that we have not been given the opportunity to air our views on internal politics that will directly or indirectly affect our future. The apparently controversial topic of co-education, we feel, should be resurrected and seriously discussed. The antiquated idea that dismiss co-education in favor of a segregated system are perfect examples of ill regeneration views and views in general. From educational, social, and economic points of view, there are numerous advantages to be found in the co-educational system as opposed to the segregated one. All that stands in the way of progress is the vote taken more than a decade ago by the others at the time, as we know that was 1974. And again, come, let's just have a rebate. Let's ask the students to take that vote. For we will be and have been affected by such a vote. Remember, it is we the youth who will take this world into the 24th century. Therefore, let us be given more respect, understanding, and attention. The negative ideas associated with youth is thrown out and replaced with new sensible ones." And Mr. Speaker, to my surprise, I find I wrote that myself in 1985 in a year of youth. As a sixth former, at the tender age of 18. I say, Mr. Speaker, this is not a view that I have just come to today. This is a view I held 30 years ago. And it's taken 30 years, well, thereabouts, plus or minus, at least a quarter century ago. I think at least a quarter century would come to help and have a serious debate about it. And that, I think, that should be welcome. But I think that in terms of the student population, it should not be ignored. Whether it be sixth form heads or sixth form head boys and girls, whether by the Gibraltar Students Association or some other representative of the body, they should be allowed to have their say and have their input in it. And not to say they may even think it's a good idea, but they prefer they say as it is. And that is a great thought over my structures, and they said, no, actually, like it as it is. But, you know, it is a real open question. Let's not close our minds by educational reports or what was said more than 40 years ago, 1974. Let's have a genuine open debate, open a frank discussion with all the stakeholders, not just a few select individuals, who we don't know the names of as yet. And our Lord's government includes in the definition of self-government certain interference. We see in the Pollister Report, 1974, at least had the courtesy to survey existing peoples and past peoples. And so, Mr. Speaker, what I would say in his motion, if he is so minded, and we're also having given motion for an amendment, if he might want to include students in his working group, or at least perhaps consider in future to include students in his working group. Purely as a matter of courtesy, especially for what is a subject which maybe will be for the next 30 years, who knows? I think it is only right, fair, and proper that the students in this community be allowed to make a contribution and an input to this working group which the government has set up on its own report. Mr. Speaker, a lot has been made of a report that was issued in 1974. But I think it is right and proper that the general public understand fully why it is we have the system we have today. And it's right and proper that the conclusion of this report, the reasoning as to how we have the system we have today, came to be, is put in the public domain again. So this is, as you said, right, I found this report on many budget people in the world, I found it before me that. Yeah, but yeah, this is not something that you can just walk into the old wicked, but can I have a copy of the source of the thing? It's well out of print. I also make it available if anybody wants a copy. And I think it's well and proper that the general public are made aware of what the sense of public feeling was at the time, the rationale at the time, how we came to be where we are today. And that should be properly informed. As does the working group, and I'm sure the working group will have had a copy of this report for its own use. And also, I think the working group, when it comes to consider the consultation model, would do well to look at what the Pollister group did. They did a very extensive consultation process. They even had in their report examples of the leaflet, as they didn't find before social media, leaflet in English and Spanish, as to the whole consultation process. I think it's quite a valuable document from if not a historic point of view, certainly a social point of view in terms of our development of the people. And so, Mr. Speaker, what I would say, I urge the government, is don't ignore the student themselves. We can have a big debate about the academics for this, about the educational value. Let's not forget the students. Let them have a voice as well in this debate. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the Honourable Dr. John Cortez, the President, Minister for Education.
Mr. Speaker, I would like, first of all, to thank the Honourable and Learned David Ogudi for his contributing his wealth of knowledge which he has acquired over the past 5 years as the outgoing Minister for Education. And what a contrast, Speaker, in presentation and research, between what we have heard from the leader of the opposition quoting a report almost half a century old as the only substance which he didn't agree with anyway, and the Honourable Mr. Clinton with a report 30 years old with the wealth of information that we have heard and the analytical way in which my Honourable friend has presented his moving of the amendment. Mr. Speaker, I can confirm as the incoming Minister for Education that the government position and my own is as stated by the Honourable Mr. Ogudi. His team now passes on to me and we will seamlessly continue the process that he has already started. And in order to reassure the Honourable Member opposite, I was given a briefing over 2 weeks ago when I changed responsibilities and took over education, which included the names of the people who were members of this working group. I don't recall them all now, but it is not going to be secret in any way. And as a former chairman of the then extremely progressive Gibraltar Union of Students, I will obviously make sure that the students view not just school students, but also people who have recently been students in the comprehensive schools have their views heard. Absolutely. And so, Mr. Speaker, I look forward to the work of the working group, to working with them, to their conclusions, and to the broader consultation, so that we can reach a decision based on current advice and not advice half a century later.
Is there any the Honourable Madeleine has done now?
Mr. Speaker, they say history has a habit of repeating itself, a maxim that is very much at the forefront of my mind at this particular moment. Because over 40 years ago, my father and many others around him, including yourself, Mr. Speaker, took to this chamber to discuss the contentious issue of co-education as the comprehensive system started to peer over a distant horizon. Many views were sought and powerful arguments made, both in favor and against, with co-education very much on the table. With hindsight, however, I think many of us feel that the decision to separate boys and girls in school as from the age of 12 was probably a mistake. Today, many decades later, we are still feeling the effects of this error to the extent that to reverse it would require significant changes to both Bayside and Westside. Perhaps the long-awaited new building for Bayside, and ideally for Westside as well, will provide us with the opportunity to wipe away the past and guarantee a co-educational future for our students. I am therefore pleased that this motion has been presented, asking the government to conduct a detailed study into the possibility. And I was also pleased to note the government's inception of a working group with this topic in mind. Although, Mr. Speaker, I am sorry to hear that the Minister for Education at the time of the last election promised GCSE and A-level students shortly after a viewpoint on the subject of co-ed to meet monthly, something which to date has not materialized and something I consider a wasted opportunity where the engagement of our youngsters who are the most affected are concerned. And as important as it is to maintain links with students, teachers and parents on views about co-education, the prospect of co-education must not be allowed to distract from matters which are even more important than the day-to-day management of schools and teaching of lessons. While less crowd-pleasing and headline-grabbing, these urgent issues are far more pressing within our educational system. They include buildings and maintenance, of course, but also resources and funding, teacher accountability, teacher morale and attendance, curriculum provision, issues within human resources, parental support, staff training, extended service incentives, and definitely a closer relationship between the Department of Education and a more proactive social services structure. These issues more accurately represent the real challenges faced by teachers and students alike. And while I welcome the ideology behind this motion, I feel that a similar focus should be given to these priorities. Otherwise, a cosmetic change will only lead to another mistake, one which again may take generations to reverse. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. On the end. On the moment, that what is now before the House is the Honourable Gibson Lucullus motion. Okay. Any other contribution? If there isn't, I will call upon the mover to the vice. Yes, the Honourable Stephen Gennaro.
Mr. Speaker, as a former president of the Dubois Teachers Association, I feel compelled to go into this debate because when I was the president of the DPA during this time, 1993, I remember bringing a motion to the floor of the DPA in order to say that co-education should be what we should have in our schools. That means I was in favor of co-education. And therefore, it was the floor that actually passed a motion which we do in reference to be 76, 75, 76, 64. Because they thought at the time, and we were talking about 92, 93, they thought that that report was a bit old and tough and dated. And therefore the floor brought a motion which was unanimously passed. And therefore it was for the executive to negotiate with government and pursue co-education. What happened was, Mr. Speaker, was that as I, as the President, started negotiations with the then government about co-education, and I went back to the members, especially the then with the Board of Directors, now based on our website, that the staff themselves were a bit apprehensive about how co-education was going to affect their working conditions. And therefore, I went back to each school and their staff, and I said, look, if you're not really convinced about being trying to forward co-education, there's a motion which the executive has to follow, and I wanted to follow, but it was the staff that were reluctant in me as the president to follow co-education. One of the issues was it educationally sound to have co-education? And therefore, what we did in the committee at the time, we got a couple of us within the committee to research and find out whether there were sound educational motives why we should have a co-education. Mr. Speaker, as it's been said here, there are no educational advantages or disadvantages about having co-education. So it's not that we should change just for the sake of changing. It is important that whatever we do, and I have said and I have declared that I am still an advocate of co-education, it is no good just to change our system if it's working just because I believe in co-education. It has to have an educational, and the most important educational argument, and therefore it's not conclusive. I welcome that we are going to have yet another committee which is going to look at it. I'm sure that the conclusion will be on the line of what we have been saying, that there is no conclusive educational reason why we should have a co-education. But for me, it's an issue that I have been trying to follow for years and years. And yet, having children and having, in my case, two girls that have gone through with the education system and gone to Westside, and now a boy is probably obviously going to go to Bayside, I am convinced that as a parent, what I want is that they have a sound education. Whether they are united as girls and boys, for me, is irrelevant. I think what we need to look at is what the professionals are saying, and in the case when I was then president in 1992-93, was that it was going to affect the challenges that boys and girls together were going to have, and basically that in then the girls were doing much better than the boys. So are we going to risk those things? Anyway, all I wanted to say was that I look forward to the working committee, to the working committee to see into co-education, because like I said, I am an advocate for co-education, but I will not have it blindly. I will not go blindly for co-education if it's going to affect our society. Thank you.
Honourable Lorenziano.
I believe that co-education is one of the components in modernizing our children's secondary educational system. Additionally, we should be also taking the opportunity of reforming our school buildings, to reform our educational system radically at the same time. If we look at the student side of education, one of the leading educational countries in the world, they actually emphasize on respect of each child's individuality and the chance for each child to develop as a unique person. They also prioritize the need to grow socially and grow their interactive skills.
to be aware of people's needs and to care about others. It is a very positive and direct approach to education when compared to the more rigid system we have here in Gibraltar. Instead of controlled, competitive, and stressful standardized methods of testing, they enjoy a highly professionalized, teacher-led encouragement and method of testing. I feel we place too much pressure on our young children at a very young age due to the approach that we currently have. The system does not place a need to study at university level. University level is a far more, university entry is a far more rigid system, and the opportunities in this economy arise through vocational and academic training achieved prior to university entry age. I believe that whilst we're looking at the possibility of introducing higher education in the culture, we must also research where single-sex schools are leading to gender oppression and to the creation of negative stereotypes. This is extremely important. The implications of this surpass the academic achievement to the impact on the way boys and girls navigate and navigate their surroundings and establish social and sexual identities. Cross-party support in co-education should be a grievance, sooner rather than later. Referring to recent interview given by Mr. Peter Watt at the opening of Fire Park School in Gibraltar, I took note on one particular point he made, which is the main advantage of having a co-education system, the fact that all children continue to learn how to respect each other in an environment working together. And the same position will be carried on in their later life in the real world when we all have to work together. So education is simply one of the flaws in the educational system. I would urge the staff to serve political agendas and to look towards a brighter future for our children. If we adopt, for example, a Finnish model, which seems to work very well, looking at the results that they actually publish, infused with our glorious climate we have here, Mr. Speaker, the size element. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, I am standing up to say that I support the amendment. And I certainly reject the arguments that have been put on the other side for not voting in favor. No indication has been given whether they intend to vote in favor or against the amendment, because I think they stood up and spoken to the original motion and got on to the amendment. I certainly think that to suggest, as I think the last speaker has done, that we run the risk of gender oppression if we go to single-sex school, given that we've all been in single-sex school, presumably we're all now suffering from gender oppression. Well, I can say I don't engage in gender oppression, but I can only speak for myself. I don't know what I'm doing on the other side. And I ask after the houses together, my colleagues have been contaminated by gender oppression through their experience of single sector. I did not have the advantage, of course, of going to a comprehensive. In my time, the system was that of the grammar school system, and I was, of course, single sector. Ooh. Change, of course, is one thing, and progress is another. And therefore, the easiest way to try and discredit an opposing view is to say that you're not being a progressive. Well, the present government in the United Kingdom apparently thinks that going back to grammar schools is progressive, because that is the policy that they just announced, that the emphasis of the government in the United Kingdom will be to go back to grammar schools on the grounds that it's educationally better. And I think the essence of the education system is to provide education. In the process, clearly, if you can demonstrate that by having co-educational schools, the education does not suffer, and society gains, then there will be another end. And that is what the motion that is being amended originally asked us to accept, without any evidence. That is to say, nothing in the report of 1974 and nothing in the quote from 1985 from the Honorable Mr. Clinton, who was quoted himself. I don't know whether that means that he was so visionary that he was already progressive at the age of 18, or so stuck in the mud that he hasn't progressed since the age of 18. But I won't pass judgment. I won't pass judgment for the honorable member. But there are the only two possible conclusions. I have to say that the idea that we can take our place naturally in the wider community of men and women only if we go to education again is something that is a compelling case that the honorable member is obviously a believer in, and I don't know if all the colleagues that he has on his side share it, or if the former member of the opposite sex that is now as an independent occupied the seat that I long occupied in that corner, shares a view. But it suggests that in the absence of co-education, which we've never had, we are incapable of taking our place naturally in the wider community of men and women. This is a very sick society, in a big way, a very sick society. And certainly, if that is the view of the leader of the opposition, then it worries me that having been in government, he did nothing about it and allowed the sickness to be perpetuated, and having belonged to a party that was over 15 years, they allowed generation after generation of school leavers to go into the wider community of men and women to take their place unnaturally when it was possible to make them take it naturally. And for all those reasons of failure to convince me and absence of logic, I have to say I support the amendment.
Can I call on the Honourable Gilbert Lukuzi to reply?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, sir. I think I have to start with, as an educator, I know the rising factor that has always fighting to make in education in Latin, and that is, what is in the best interest of the people? If politicians on either side of the side put that first and foremost and leave aside all the partisan views, then inevitably we will end up getting and providing our children with the best possible options for them for the future. And that, Mr. Speaker, is something that I must stress and repeat is necessary. There are arguments for and against the education, which is said already by the members. You can read figures, twist them round, whichever way you like, and so on. Well, what is best? But figures that are always based on just simple theory of the things themselves. Does that in itself provide the best education for our children? Because what is it that we want to give our children? Do we want to produce a set of youngsters that get 3, 4, 8, or 8 stars at their level, and then throw them out, like into the deep end of the swimming pool, and say, now off you go off to the further studies? Or do we want to make sure that these students are prepared in the best way possible for the adult life, or which is a lifetime, they're going to have at least another 60 years to go forward? So everything is not just simple getting A and A stars, nice as they are, proud as we all are, and so on. Yeah. I mean, I've always, I think my fellow predecessor to, I've also had the post of president and support and disappointed. We always have to listen to joke going around Jim Kotovic and so on. If the academic results in a particular year were quite good, outstanding, it's because the board has very clever children, especially parents and so I don't say my family, my daughter is. However, in the result of that, it was as well the teachers are not as good as the ones who used to have. Yeah. So we can play about and find excuses and reasons for whatever. But a good value point that I think we also have to bear in mind is what is it that we are providing for our children? Are we just simply providing to them a level certificate in going to like that, or are we providing them with the best possible preparation for the future of their life? One of the things for which I've always declared my favoritism towards co-education is that in the course of history, slowly co-education was introduced first into what is now called middle school. Once upon a time, before the community, they were actually called junior school, and they were single sex at one stage. And for various reasons, and Mr. Speaker, I cannot obviously speak or try to give you any reference. You were very much a very, very senior educationalist in the early 70s before you took the bold decision to have to resign your post to be able to become a member of this parliament or the House of Assembly who was at the time. But for reasons that we can spend hours and hours discussing, the decision was taken not to introduce this co-education. There are some other reasons that people say, and others have written in the report, but up to 1974, the introduction of the then called Education Ordinance, now Education Act. Prior to 1974, there was a very different set of education. There was a board which was chaired by the bishop, and which non-Roman Catholics had problems, non-Roman Catholic teachers had problems in getting teaching jobs in what was state schools. And past people to this religion, especially had to end up teaching in the Hebrew school because they were not, although they were Christian, they were not Roman Catholic. But that is another chapter of history which perhaps a future nephew of the second Minister for Education might want to do his master's thesis on which he's very interested. And perhaps, you know, I've known Christopher Cortez for some time. I value the thoroughness of this type of thing. So perhaps at one stage is an extra consent. I could also have a look at the results of what he's written out in his thesis. But not to deviate further, Mr. Speaker. Yes, it's valid to say in a letter to the Chronicle and so on, if we have a system that works, then it bent, broke, well fixed. Does it work? That's the question. Does it work? What we ask people really to say works. Does it work? Why? Because we've got X number of people with very young age styles. Or does it work? Because we've all spoken and saying, I don't think it's crossing anyone's mind. We want to keep, obviously, to a comprehensive system. A comprehensivism in its full sense, which is equality everyone, must include, in my opinion, must include that equality of males and females, especially in delivery subjects. I'm glad to hear the minister reminding the powers that it was them who managed to bring back and get rid of that problem that my predecessor in the chief position myself, who had always been against this inequality of opportunities that the girls were able to stay within their familiar surroundings of the school to receive their levels and so on. But politics in policy, like you said, it was actually the DSLC who introduced that inequality and took away the opportunity for basic students to remain in basic certificate form. So they did fix what was broke. You see, and at the end of the day, what happened? It was students who got the best deal possible. And that is what I want to keep on repeating. We must all bear in mind in working towards the future. So that's a tight position. By having the students, having the boys staying back in Bayside to repeat those useful things and so on, the fact to say is, well, look, there seems to be lack of rules now to be able to have a sixth form common room. That's the classification. What do we have, a sixth form common room, or do we have, you know, classroom opportunities for the children to learn? And therefore, what is in the best interest of the pupil? Best interest of the pupil is that they're able to get adequate results that would allow them to go on into higher education and so on. So, something has to give way to something, what is said. Therefore, Mr. Speaker, I want as well to repeat that in the amended motion In the title it says that Moses has been keeping his commitment to God and has already set up a working group. It made up of teachers, officials, Department of Education, union officials, and parents. And I think there is no mention of the word students. I think Dr. Cortez has been, and the minister already indicated that he will certainly fully vote in that respect and make sure that students are represented. But it's not reflected in this motion. Yeah? Well, Mr. Cortez, you alluded that you wanted to make sure that students were represented in the working group.
My comment was that I don't need to pull my voice. It's going to happen anyway. It's not that I'm going to force anybody to involve students. It's something that is a logical thing to do.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that. Mr. Speaker, an amendment has to be made to the wording here. Just for the record, Mr. Speaker, I like things to be, put down properly. The omission of the word students could be the exception tomorrow or the future generations to say, look, we won't be thinking about students because the word is not included here. Okay? So, Mr. Speaker, whatever happens, can I wind up by repeating to our members, please bear in mind, always think, what is in the best interest of the people, and how can it be best delivered, and how can we ensure that not only are things working right, but they can work even better to make the world better and even better education really down the system. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, just very quickly on a couple of matters that have been raised. In the first place, speaking on the amendment by the Honourable Mr. McCready on the motion, the question before the House is simply whether or not co education should be introduced into the book. That is what we are debating. And as the Honourable Mr. McCready has said, the evidence and the empirical studies are in a sense half-half as to whether it would be a benefit and whether it would actually be to the detriment of one of the senators. The Honourable Mr. has asked the question whether we should consider fundamentally the reasons why we educate our children. To be honest, Mr. Speaker, if we are to ask that question philosophically, then I would suggest that we keep more Plato and Socrates and we read more David Herbert Mountain's Women in Love and that we teach children how to meditate. But that is not the question before the House. The question before the House is co-education more beneficial, yes or no? And on the reasons that have been put forward by my learned honourable friend, Mr. McCready, the answer is that has to be the subject of empirical, knowledge-based study, and no one here has the answer to that question without being able to undergo that important consultation process. And I have to just finish by saying that the Honourable Mr. Clinton said that the only logical conclusion on a debate on education, he said that the only logical conclusion that he could draw from the absence of a personal education, setting up the names of the persons on this committee, has to be, they were keeping it secret. I can think of 20,000 reasons why the government did not announce by way of press release the names of the committee. We may have decided not to do so because persons of the committee decided that they did not want to start that stage because the Honourable Minister had not yet got to that basis. It is almost as if to suggest by a scientist that if a spider whose legs have been broken off, the only logical conclusion is, rather than the legs being broken off, that the spider is dead. It is a totally illogical conclusion, and it is not certainly the only conclusion, Mr. Speaker.
I'm particularly grateful to the Honourable Neil Cross and Leonard Neil Cross for that contribution. There has, in fact, been, Mr. Speaker, very little said across the floor of this House which merits a response. There's been very little said in substance related to the amended version itself, which is what we're actually debating now. Is there anything in the amended motion that they disagree with? Is there anything that they agree with? People who are number the wiser. The only issue in relation to the amended motion that has been raised has been by Mr. Clinton. And I would have hoped, if we were going to talk about the amended motion and this being a debate with a working group, looking at it in consultation and the possibility of recommendations being made to the government, I would have hoped that it would have been a little bit more positive. But if we started talking about the composition, the secret meeting that my little friend has alluded to, talk to the speaker about trying to find issues that are around now. Trying to create things where there is absolutely none. The motion talks, the amended motion talks of a working group having been set up. It's not a question of secrecy. We have said there is a working group that will report to government, and it talks about professional level private education, union officials, parents. Beyond this, Dr. Kodak also said, I certainly have been given a list of the people in the working group. I don't have it with me, but no secret to say, the chairman of the working group is the current senior education advisor, Mr. Darren Griff. He will be chairing the working group. Included in the working group, as one would expect, are the head teachers of the comprehensive school. There, schools are the ones that are most affected. Most affected by this, so they will be part of the working group. Included in the working group will be a representative of the Divorce Teachers Association. President is currently Mr. Bonacore. And there are also parents and parents associations included in the working group. Suggestion is that students have been somehow with some Machiavellian plot excluded. Certainly haven't been excluded. The fact that they don't form part of the working group itself doesn't mean that they're excluded at all. Doesn't mean at all that their views are not relevant. Does not mean that their views are not important. Of course their views are relevant. And their views are important. And we mentioned relevant stakeholders in the amended motion in terms of consultation. And of course, very relevant stakeholders will be the students themselves. But the working group, one of the terms of reference is, if there is going to be a recommendation on the consultation process, is to make recommendations as to how that is to be conducted and who is to be included. Students. To include everybody in the secondary sector. To include those in the primary sector that are going to go into the secondary sector and have their views. Those are matters that have to be considered by the working group. And what we have not done is create a new cut-off point to say these students have to be included, these are not. That's a matter for the working group. And I know that it will not be necessary, as Dr. Kirk mentioned, it will not be necessary for a minister to say, you have to do this and you have to consult students, you have to get the views of students. Of course that is going to happen. That is intrinsic in this approach. Clinton also says government should not close its mind to it. I opened my contribution by saying government position we have an open mind. Precisely the opposite of what the honourable member has alluded to. Malan suggested that single step comprehensive was probably a mistake. That can be taken. This is probably pushing it and putting it a bit too far, as Mr. Yama has put it. The Honourable Mr. Osama has already dealt with in terms of creative gender stereotype and gender and gender oppressive. As has been said, that most of us, most of us here are the product of the single set comprehensive system, which the other lady suggests is probably a mistake. I look around and see that we haven't turned out that badly after all. Although that's a matter of opinion. And I personally, having gone through the single step comprehensive education, did not feel at the time that I was missing out on anything on education grounds. Was it a mistake? It happened. We're all essentially products of that system. By and large, we have people in the world that generations that have been educated on that particular basis. And Mr. Bayes, and I welcome you to the contribution by Mr. Bayes as a former as an educator, as a professional in the field, and a former president of the Devoted Teachers Association. And he does say that this is not just about academic results. Students need to be prepared for adult life. That's precisely what we do in our schools. Prepare children for adult life and not just give them an academic education. But the question is whether they're better prepared or less prepared, or is the implication that they would be better prepared for adult life given mixed-sex environment. That is something that the working group will need to look at, and the other member has indicated that what needs to be looked at is what the best solution for the day is. There is nothing in what I have heard from the honourable member opposite in terms of any evidence or any suggestion as to which is best, and therefore, having heard the debate across both sides of the House, I'm more convinced than ever that the terms of the motion that the honourable member put are mistaken, that the right motion for Parliament to pass is in terms of the amended motion, which I have moved, and therefore I have great pleasure in once again commending that amended motion to you.
I call for the House to divide in its vote. I call for the House to divide in its vote. The amendment in the terms moved by the Honourable Good Bishop Quilly will vote. Do you want a division? Very well.
PJ11. J.J. Simon.
Yes.
R.M. Clinton.
No.
J.E. Cortez.
Aye.
N.S. Costa.
Aye.
D.A. Peterson. J.J. Garcia.
Yes.
M.D. Hassan Naon.
Yes.
A.J. Islam.
Yes.
G.H. Mbili.
Yes.
S.E. Linares.
Yes.
L.F. Phillips. L.F. Yamas, I beg your pardon.
No.
E.J. Phillips.
No.
F.R. Pizarro.
Yes.
E.J. Hayes.
No.
S.J. Sacramento.
Yes.
Against the amendment. The amendment is carried. We now have the motion before the House as amended. And the convention that I have seen in this House applied over the years by speakers has been that where a motion and the amendment overlap in the manner in which these two, you either speak on one or you speak on the other. And therefore, I will allow the members who have not spoken at all this morning, namely the Honourable Elliot Phillips, the Honourable Samantha Sacramento, the Honourable Dr. Joseph Garcia, the Honourable Dr. Minister,
The Honourable Mr. Paul Van Zandt and the Honourable Archbishop, they cannot speak on the motion of amendment. I will not allow any of the others because I don't think that they would, well, they're going to be repeating themselves. And then, when all that is over and done with, the Honourable the Leader of the Opposition has the right to reply and he is the final speaker in the debate.
Mr. Speaker, I can assess that on this side of the House we have been rendered perplexed by the failure of Honourable Members to support the amendment put by the Honourable Mr. Likudi. It is an amendment which talks of the creation of the working group, and that should, in our view, have been exactly what Honourable Members must have wanted to see as a conclusion of this debate, the fact that the group has been established and how it is going to be dealing with these issues. Mr. Speaker, therefore, one is left with the feeling that we are dealing with a motion brought not because there was an underlying purpose that Honourable Members obviously would want to see the government move to, but that there was simply a desire to get up and say something, say anything that dealt with the issue of education. Mr. Speaker, I am going to speak in respect of this motion both in relation to the work that the working group is doing, but I'm going to start giving the House my personal view. Because I think it's important that the House has heard the views of all members, and it should hear the personal views of members. Mr. Speaker, the reason this matter is with a working group of educators and professionals is because this is not a matter for politicians to make their minds up on. This is not a matter where the leader of the opposition should bring a motion to the House to promote co-education happening in one moment and not say, as the Honourable former Minister for Education, Mr. Likudi, has said, this must be dealt with by the educators. My personal opinion, Mr. Speaker, is that a report that is 42 years old has absolutely no relevance today. I think it is absolutely irrelevant to go back to the decision-making process in 1974 to take a political position today. Mr. Speaker, my personal opinion, not to interfere with the working group, is very simply that we do not live life in single-sex silos, that we live life in cohabitation with people of opposite sexes and of same sexes with different sexual orientations. I believe, Mr. Speaker, that our children build strong relationships across the sexual divide in first and secondary school, and that we rip them apart when we send them to single-sex comprehensive. I believe that those relationships do not recover from the at least the initial 4 years of separation. But Mr. Speaker, I believe that as a past pupil. I believe that as a parent. And I believe that, of course, as a politician. But I am no one to decide whether that is the system that produces better academic results and potentially better rounded individuals or not. Because what I definitely know is that I don't know what the right answer is. I can tell you what I think, and I can tell you what I feel, but I can't tell you as an educator what the right answer is. Mr. Speaker, that's why this is not an issue for cross-party agreement, as Lord Mr. Yamas has said, one way or the other. What we should have had is cross-party agreement to support a motion to establish a working group of professionals, supporting the fact that the Minister for Education had already done that when he was responsible for education when he was there. Mr. Speaker, hearing Mr. Freyer speak, and one is left with the impression that we agree that this is an issue for professionals.
but yet he's not supported the motion amending the motion put by his leader, which reached conclusions. The same conclusions that we might personally reach, but which reached conclusions politically about things none of us, except for him and Mr. Linares, are professionals at. And that, I think, Mr. Speaker, is the thing we have to be very, very careful to fall into the trap of not doing. But I think this motion has been an excellent opportunity, Mr. Speaker, for Mr. Likudi to demonstrate the work that the government has already done on this subject and why this must not be an issue for this House. In the time that he has been Minister for Education, Joe Likudi has done many things, Mr. Speaker, most of which are well known to the general public. I mean, as you said, built schools, the physical aspect of education, and the university, also the physical aspect of education, a prize that was elusive to most, in fact, elusive to all other former ministers for education and as he delivered. But the curriculum has also changed in consultation with teachers, so that we now have the teaching of local history in our schools, something that goes to producing not just more rounded members of our community, to producing more rounded Gibraltarians who also understand our context. Now, so really we have to see where that working group takes us in relation to their education. But to say that the working group should include the peoples is really, Mr. Speaker, to stretch the concept of consultation in the context of decision making at a professional level to breaking point, as the Honourable Mr. Clinton has done. Of course, pupils and students must be involved in the process of consulting once the working group has reported, which is what the motion talks about. But to say that this is from part of the working group is something that only members on this side of the House could say legitimately. Because we talked about the possibility of people being able to vote at the age of 16, and they poo-pooed it. So, how is it that the Honourable Member can get up and say they must form part of the working group in this context, but they must not make decisions as to who governs? Okay. So, the working group, of course, will have to take cognizance of the views of pupils and students. The consultation that the government does as a result of the working group report will, of course, be something which will be consulted on with students and with people. But Mr. Speaker, the working group is meeting during working hours. It's doing a job. If we had proposed that the working group should include people, honourable gentlemen would be saying that it would be time to get the advice of the chief and that we were pulling them away from their work. It really, Mr. Speaker, makes little sense. Other than perhaps an attempt to ingratiate oneself with a particular demographic. If that's what it is, Mr. Speaker, I think it's fairly outstanding. The question to say, don't ignore the students. This is about the students. Well, Mr. Speaker, for the reasons that Mr. Liguri has given, of course it is. And of course it will. And Mr. Cortez has now confirmed that it will, as it must. But who did their decision-making body consult in 2006 when they made the decision to go for education? The Liberal General can't tell me who was in the secret group that made the decision in 2006 to go to for education. Or which students or people were consulting in 2006? Because if it was about the students, and they should not have been ignored, they appear to have been blindly put aside in 2006. And because they were not on the committee. A committee of which, by the way, Mr. Speaker, there was no question, as I understand it. Because I have found out about it, I must say, to the Honourable Gentleman, I have found out about it today. I have found out today that there was a committee established by them in secret, because there was no record, that did not consult
result or include any people. So it is really quite something. It's really quite something to see. This is not a pendulum swinging. This is a pendulum swinging on the other side. This is another example of the politics of what sounds right to them. And we must be very careful in Gibraltar, Mr. Speaker, not to move to the politics which parts of the rest of the world are moving to, of doing the things that sound right, whether they are right or not. We must not move to post-truth politics in Gibraltar. We must stick to the politics of the facts and of the work of experts like the experts in the working group established. That's not the same to figure that the group established in 2006 got it wrong or got it right. It's to say that by their measure, the measure that they've applied today, this must be a secret group that fails themselves or to include the people and the students. Because it's bigger, what might sound right on the lips of a leader of the opposition looking and casting around for relevance in this community may not be what is right for implementation in our schools and in the best interest of our people. But as usual, Mr. Speaker, I thought I would give the Honourable Gentleman, opposite the mover of the motion, the benefit of the doubt, because believe it or not, I always do, Mr. Speaker. And so I went back to their election pamphlet of 2015. Now, Mr. Speaker, I know that the Honourable Gentleman, obviously, in preparing his motion, hadn't read our manifesto, because he would have come across the part which the Honourable Mr. Rigotti read to him, which demonstrated that what we were doing was already what they were prompting us to do. But I am looking in particular for reasons that are being debated outside this House, constantly surprised by his failure to remember what was in their pamphlet at the election. You see, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman has said in his motion that he calls on the government to generate a debate by undertaking a consultation exercise with teachers. To generate a debate by undertaking a consultation exercise with teachers. This morning, Mr. Speaker, I'm quite happy to read the whole thing. Teachers, the unions, parents, students, and other stakeholders, with everybody, consult and generate a debate with everybody. This morning, Mr. Speaker, I reread the whole of the 2015 GOP election pamphlet. Because it's such a quick read, Mr. Speaker, there's no point even asking the electronic gadget one has today to search. So we can read the whole thing, just to give them the benefit of not missing one reference. And what the Honourable Gentleman has done in his motion is entirely contradict the position that was in their manifesto last year, a year ago. This is one of the quickest political vault facts in history. Their manifesto, Mr. Speaker, on page 16, features a photograph of Mr. Hammond, who is not here today, no doubt for good reason. I made no criticism of that, with a graphic of Rook from the next page and the word co-education. That's it. There's a jumble of words at the bottom that no doubt some media guru advised them was a good way of presenting things under a text from Mr. Hammond and says the word co-education. On page 17, the word co-education appears again. And it appears in the context of a statement which is one of their flagship policies at the election. We will move from the two single-sex schools to one co-educational facility, state-of-the-art at Rook. What consultation, Mr. Speaker? Their policy was a fait accompli on one of the most important issues in the election, which was the movement of the use of lands
is to go from two schools to one in co-education. No consultation with students, with pupils, with teachers, with unions, with anyone, with parents, no one. The policy was co-education. That is what people were asked to vote for, Mr. Speaker, and to put everyone in the same school. Well, look at the figure. You may know now, given what I've said, that as a past pupil, as a parent and as a politician, my instinct is I believe in co-education. We might agree on that subject. But to simply impose in the context of the debate of something as important as what we're talking about here, which they speak of in fascinating terms when they come to this house in this motion, in the context of an election pamphlet, that would be the policy, and it's really quite something, Mr. Speaker. They were not for a consultation. They were for co-education to stop. Now, 1 year later, they have come round to the concept of consultation on this careful subject. Look, Mr. Speaker, this is a professor, the person with whom I have the opportunity of working in a number of different fields. I have the deepest respect for him. And the deepest respect for him is a man who is an educator, he's a musician, he's one of Gibraltar's cultured and developed minds. He has done an in-depth study on the subject, and he's an educator. And the people who were on their committee, the people who will be in our committee, are the people who are experts at this. And you can find reports one way or another, Mr. Speaker. And basically, in the end, there will have to be a decision made based on that advice. But to go from that careful process of detailed analysis and consultation to simply say, everyone at work, poor education, that was absolute nonsense, Mr. Speaker. So I will tell the Honourable Gentleman that I have been pleased again to see another complete and utter U-turn from him, where he is once again at last being made to face the right way. I don't know whether it's by logic, I don't know whether it's by people who've approached him who have put him on the right track, I don't know what it is, but at least now he's talking about consultation. He's talking about consultation in all the wrong context, because I think that the Honourable, the Father of the House, has demonstrated that the wording of the motion that the Honourable Member brought was verging on the ridiculous, Mr. Speaker. And he's really quite something when a leader of the opposition, who should be the guiding hand to the other more junior members of the opposition, can allow himself to put a motion in the form that we have before the House. Really quite something about people taking their natural order in the wider community of men and women, as if that were not the case. Mr. Obama has already said that. So you can think of the only way to lead on something as sensitive and as important as a wholesale reform of our system of education is to do so in consultation with the right experts. That is the way to lead, and that is the way to be truly progressive, Mr. Speaker. This is not an issue for politicians and an issue for teachers attempting to ingratiate oneself one way or another. It's an issue for careful consideration. And for that, Mr. Speaker, I commend the work that has been done in the Department of Education and the Department in the right way. So, Mr. Speaker, what we see in the context of the debate we've had already, and the Honourable Members have featured this morning, in the context of the amendment put by the Honourable Mr. Ligouri, is first that their position in 2015 was one of imposition of co-education without consultation, and second, that their position today, although on the terms of a motion which did not enjoy any support, was to move to our manifesto of 2015, which is where we've demonstrated that we are already in the Department of Education, and which is what we are moving to ensure our society has the benefit of in the context of making an important decision like this. So, Mr. Speaker, the amended motion, which is the motion now before the House, deserves the support of the whole House if we are going to have a cross-party approach, to preparing work, to advise how we should progress on this matter. Because anybody who does not support this motion, and I know they haven't supported the amendment, but now they have to support or not support the motion as it is before the House, will not be supporting the creation of the working group with some progressions, which are frankly not just unobjectionable, but that they are absolutely the right terms of reference for a decision to be made which is in the interest of our community. So, Mr. Speaker, given all of that, I urge honourable members on both sides of the House to support the motion as amended so that our community can be informed by the work of this group that has been established by the Department of Education and by the former minister, and which will be taken forward as they do by the new minister, Sean Cuthbert. I recommend the motion.
Is there any other member who can speak before I call upon the leader of opposition to exercise his right to reply? The leader of the leader of opposition.
Mr. Speaker, thank you very much. Mr. Speaker, the opposition is not going to be supporting the amendment, as indeed we didn't support the amendment to the motion. We're not supporting the amended motion because the motion is inherently contradictory in itself, Mr. Speaker. Quite apart from some of the reasons that have already been put forward by my friend, Mr. Clinton. Not only is the motion inherently contradictory, but it also, quite surprising, bearing in mind what the Honourable Chief Minister has said about our position being contradictory, it also contradicts, Mr. Speaker, statements that the Chief Minister himself made to public television on the 15th of December of last year, just after the general election, which is the very reason why I drafted my motion in the way that I drafted my motion, as I outline in a moment. But, Mr. Speaker, the speeches from the Honourable Gentleman, particularly the Chief Minister, but now, surprisingly, I have to say, Minister McKinney, unnecessarily aggressive, Mr. Speaker, unnecessarily absurd, Mr. Speaker, and arrogant, Mr. Speaker, to their core. How dare you, the question, how dare you question government policy? How dare you want to bring a motion to debate something as important as co-education? And all it has to be said, Mr. Speaker, on a motion calling on the government to generate debate by undertaking a consultation exercise with teachers, union, parents, students, and other stakeholders to determine the views of the community on this issue. And Mr. Speaker, from the Honourable Gentleman's contribution, the Honourable Minister McCauley, it really does not fill me with confidence that he is approaching this issue with an open mind. Indeed, Mr. Phillips, to my left, who is very well-hated, the program is to me. Is he really approaching this with an open mind? Because the whole tenor of the contribution by Honourable Gentleman was, yes, we want to consult, yes, we want to do this, yes, we want to do that, but really, the undercurrent is that they are not in favour of it, Mr. Speaker. That's the reality of it, and that is what comes across from listening to the speeches of the Honourable Gentleman opposite. And it is surprising, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it is surprising.
speaking to say, well, why have you drafted the nation as you drafted it? Starting from the premise, yes, that you believe in co-education, but then calling for a consultation issue. And he also said, well, look, in your manifesto, you were in favor of co-education, now what you're saying is let's consult on it. But there's a basic reason for that, Mr. Speaker. As you remind us incessantly, we lost the election, they won the election, Mr. Speaker. They won the election. Mr. Speaker, on the 15th of December 2015, in a program, City Park program on GBC, and in fact it was reported on GBC over the last year, you want to advocate co-education as third consultation necessary. The Chief Minister has said he personally favors the concept of co-education schools, but believes a process of consultation with the feedback. The Honourable Gentleman opposite are conducting themselves in exactly the same way as I certainly have conducted themselves during the course of all these speeches. Arrogant, absorbing, angry, Mr. Speaker. I am on my feet. I ought to be allowed to continue with my speech without Honourable Gentleman constantly heckling and all the trying to interrupt.
May I ask Honourable Members to observe the best principles of parliamentary practice and not those which are live sitting on a Saturday evening and at their together at the expense.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, and of course in that program, he didn't say that he was setting up a working group. What he said was that he personally believes in the concept of co-education, which is what I say in my motion, Mr. Speaker, so that there ought to be a consultation exercise. So, Mr. Speaker, that's not what this motion actually does, Mr. Speaker. This is the consultation exercise, and I'll come to it in a moment, comes at the very end of the process, after there is a report from the working group. There is nothing about the working group in what he said to GBC. And the reason why I have drafted my motion in the way that I have drafted it is believing that I can come to this House with a constructive motion and try and find some common ground between the opposition and the government. That is too much to help, Mr. Speaker, because even a motion that is brought to this House in good faith, that is designed to find some common ground between the opposition and the government, meets with a kind of aggression and acerbiceness that we are met today in the speeches of our honourable gentlemen, and in particular Minister Mukuri and the Chief Minister, Mr. Speaker. But there is no to this, because it follows by motion, because it follows the statement that the Chief Minister himself made to GDC on the 15th. Of December of last year, just days after the general election. Mr. Speaker, and indeed with a lot of humour, the father of the House have examined the reasons are set out as part of my motion for the grounds for supporting my motion in paragraph 1 and 2. Mr. Speaker, paragraph 1 and 2, in particular paragraph 2 of my motion, is the central argument in favor of co-education. The Honourable Gentleman described it as a social reason, but indeed it is also an educational reason. And when you look at all the reports and all the studies, and all the arguments of the people that have advocated co-education, what they say is this. Education is much more than just simply the teaching of particular subjects. It's about preparing people to take their place in the wider world. And the wider world includes both men and women, and therefore you are not preparing young people properly by segregating. And a part of a better way to prepare young people for that wider world is by actually having that co-education
and young people working together. And Mr. Speaker, in the report, in the first Working Party report, we set out the case for co-education and the case for single-sex education, which is the last time that there was a major public consultation exercise and a major report based on the work of a group sector board involving educationalists, involving parents and involving unions. This is what they have to say. And this is the point about my paragraph on the wider world of men and women. Education is not merely, I quote, not merely instruction at school in reading, writing, arithmetic, history, geography. Education is the whole process starting at birth by which a child becomes a mature individual and an adult member of society. Education starts and is always centered in the family. Apart from academic instruction, the school's main contribution to child is showing him, her, how to live in a larger society than the family. How to meet, assess, work with, and just get on with people of different types and backgrounds. Half the people our children are going to meet in his or her life outside school are of the opposite sex. Why, therefore, do we not accept the responsibility implied in the word education of helping our children to get on with members of the opposite sex? That's the point, Mr. Speaker. That is the point. And of course, I would hope that nobody in this house, because I can't vote for everybody, but I would hope that nobody in this house has a dysfunction by reason of being segregated at secondary school from members of the opposite sex. But this is the point, Mr. Speaker. The Honourable Fellow of the House, ingenious as he is with his arguments, entertaining as he is with his arguments, this is the point. It's about what better prepares a child to meet the challenges outside education. And if the challenges outside school are challenges of people working in a mixed environment, why not replicate that? And that also is part of education within the secondary education system. And Mr. Speaker, a lot has been made about my quote from my quoting the Pollister report. But the reality is, and indeed, I think it was the Chief Minister that said that the report was not relevant today. That's precisely the point. The reasons for the report in 1974 for rejecting co-education are not relevant today. That is the whole point of my going through the report. Society moves on. Society develops, and the reasons for rejecting co-education in the 1970s are no longer reasons that are prevalent or apposite today. That is the point. So, Mr. Speaker, I come to the wording of the motion itself, and I deal with contributions and honourable members as I go through. Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Mr. Coffin, he said, there are 20,000 reasons not to announce the names of those on the working group. 30,000, 40,000. But Mr. Speaker, again, that misses the point. For a government that likes to issue press releases, Mr. Speaker, like confetti in a wedding, as I said before in this house, for the government to suddenly forget not to come out with a press release saying, we have set up this working group to report on this secular co-education, Mr. Speaker, that is very strange indeed, Mr. Speaker. Very strange indeed. And the first time that the working group, the fantastic thing that Mr. Liguria put into the Chief Minister, absolutely fantastic. What a wonderful Minister of Education we have had. And this is proof of it. Wonderful, wonderful Minister of Education. This is proof of it. That we have set up this working group to report on the special of co-education. And the first thing that we find out about it, Mr. Speaker, is when I file my motion on co-education, and he files, and I'm very grateful that he filed it with plenty of time, that he filed an amendment to the motion. Well, Mr. Speaker, and one
one would forgive any opposition, not only this opposition, for being rather skeptical about the government's intentions or the government's good work in setting up this working group that nobody knew anything about until Mr. Lufuli filed amendments to the motion. It's particularly surprising, Mr. Speaker, given that the Honourable Chief Minister, in his program, the City Pulse, in the 15th of December of 2015, did not say, Mr. Speaker, that he was setting up a working group. What he said was that he himself was in favour of co-education, only the populist, our Chief Minister, I have to say, and he probably thinks that's a popular lie, but he doesn't want to step on the toes with anybody else. And listen, but let's consult. Where is the speaker? He didn't say that he certainly expected to set up a working group. And Mr. Speaker, the point made by, no, I'm not going to do that. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, I'm not giving away because the courtesy is never extended to me. And today that I have a right to respond, they are going to sit down, they are going to humble, they are going to laugh, but above all, Mr. Speaker, they are going to have to listen to me. Because I don't get the chance, Mr. Speaker, to have the tiny word. But today, Mr. Speaker, they are going to have to listen, and I know that one of the Chief Minister has, as soon as I said this, that exited the chamber, obviously he doesn't want to listen to what I have to say. Or he's going to listen to it from the answer. But Mr. Speaker, the point made by my honourable friend Mr. Clinton about students is a point that is well known, Mr. Speaker. This is a motion that is brought before this House that says that a working group has been set up composed of union officials, officials from the Department of Education, parents, and girls put by the side by March 2017, and it doesn't include the very same people that we're all talking about, the very same people that whose future we are today discussing. Mr. Speaker, that is an omission of huge magnitude, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Cortez said, oh, but their views are going to be heard. Well, look, Mr. Speaker, their views are going to be heard. But you are here or there, Mr. Speaker. What we want is for students to be included in within any working group, but well, within any working group, so that their views can properly be taken into account as and when the decisions are taken, Mr. Speaker, and not as an afterthought, Mr. Speaker. No, Mr. Speaker, I'm not giving way. No, I'm not giving way. Sit down and listen. Sit down and listen, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker. And then he said it's a logical thing to do. Well, look, I'm sorry, but that is not the logical thing to do. The logical thing to do is to include those who speak that you are discussing within the working group who are making the decision or the recommendation about that group speech, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, now we come to the huge contradiction between the statements made by the Chief Minister to City Park Programme on the 15th of December of last year and this motion, and indeed the inherent nonsense of the motion itself is sufficient. Because this is a motion that basically says that by March 2017, this working group is going to advise Her Majesty's Government of Gibraltar on the advantages and disadvantages of the current and mixed co-educational models for comprehensive schools. So on the 17th of March, we will have a report on the advantages and disadvantages. And then it says, secondly, to make recommendations on whether secondary education at comprehensive schools in Gibraltar is best delivered by the co-ed or similar. And then it says, to make recommendations on possible implementation of the scenario. And then lastly, Mr. Speaker, and most remarkably, I have to say, and that is the reason I could not support it, because I was reading this last night, and I thought about really honourable gentlemen, and saying to the honourable, look, I am English, but of course, it's not a question of an English, because the mechanics is already in motion. They've already done this. They still can make recommendations on the appropriate consultation model to ensure that the views of the relevant stakeholders are taken into account. The views of the relevant stakeholders, Mr. Speaker, are taken into account after there is a recommendation by the working group of what is the model, Mr. Speaker. That is placing the cart before the horse, Mr. Speaker. Because the consultation exercise ought to take place before the working group reports to the government, Mr. Speaker. That is the reality, and this is ill-conceived, Mr. Speaker. And it also contradicts what the Chief Minister himself said on the 15th of December, which is that there would be a consultation exercise. And that's what I would have thought, and that is what we would have supported, Mr. Speaker. A consultation. No, Mr. Speaker! Mr. Speaker, no!
May I draw the attention of the Honourable Minister to Rule 45, interruption. Please read it carefully. Because three times you have attempted to invoke the rule to elucidate some matter raised by one. You have not succeeded. I think that that is an indication that the Honourable Leader of the who has the floor, has not been to hold the floor to you, and therefore you should allow him to take on the speech.
Mr. Speaker.
And if you look at it, I'm asking you to read the rule.
Here's
a copy of the rule.
No, I'm grateful for that, and I am well aware of
it. Well, then, let me get the opposition to get on with the
speech. I simply ask, on a point of order, in the case of the rule.
The leader of the opposition.
If the honourable minister wants to make a point of order.
No. He hasn't been
making a point of order.
I accept that. But the honourable minister was about to say, I would like to make a point of order then. And he just said it to sit down. And Mr. Speaker, with the very greatest of respect, it is important that we have debate about this. And it's important that you rightly point out that we have them in keeping with the rules. And if somebody is not giving way, look, it's a matter for them whether they give way or not. But if there is a point that the honourable minister wants to make, which is a point of order, and you would then rule whether it be a point of order or not, he must be entitled to put it to you, and then you would decide whether to do that.
But he has on.
He hasn't given way. Right now, after I have drawn his attention to the rules on interruption, it comes up with a point of order. I am prepared to listen to him if it is on a point of order. Okay? But what I think is a pity that we have had, since 11:30 we have been debating a motion positively, constructively, and that is to generate right at the end. I think that is a matter for debate, and I have to tell honourable members that it is a matter for debate. Now, the honourable is pretty good. On a point of order.
Speaker, it is certainly not our intention to degenerate the debate. In fact, it has been exposed, you have indicated earlier. It's part of the constructive debate with views said on both sides. The point is quite simply that I'm not sure where the rules related to interruption. It seems to me that getting up to ask the Honourable Member to give way to correct a misapprehension that the Honourable Member clearly has on the points that he is making in respect of our amended motion, and in particular, on a particular relevance, is the fact that it is the very reason why he says the opposition, or the DSD, is voting against, and he has a fundamental misapprehension as to all that. And that is the only reason why I ask you to give way.
The rule says that another member is equal, provided that the member speaking is willing to give way and refuse to speak. The Honourable Leader of the Opposition has not done so on three occasions. Right? So you're going to continue to interact on the basis asking him to give way, we're not going to give any way.
Thank you very much. Mr. Speaker, I have to say that I get flogged, politically speaking, mercilessly
from members opposite, mercilessly. And I sit down, and I take it on the chin, and I listen. I do not interrupt, I do not heckle, and I just listen. On the other occasion that I have asked for the Honourable Gentleman to give way because there has been a misrepresentation about my position, people have not given way to me. Now, I believe, Mr. Pickard. Therefore, I have taken the view that on this occasion, I am not giving way, Mr. Speaker. The Honourable Gentleman, I have read the motion as set out, that he has drafted it. And he has set out, firstly, that there is going to be advice to the government. Secondly, to make recommendations on what the model, whether it should be co-education or single-sex. And to make recommendations on implementation. And then it says to make recommendations on appropriate consultation models to ensure that views of relevant stakeholders are taken into account, Mr. Speaker. And certainly on our side, we believe that the working group ought to be composed as widely as possible, that we know who the people in that working group are, as indeed we knew who the people within the Qualifa working group were, which included the headmistress of the girls' comprehensive, the headmaster of the boys' comprehensive, the director of education, Mr. Pitaluga, was director of education then. He then later on became the secretary. The unions were there, there was a statistician, and there were people across the board. We think that this working group is composed too narrowly, and that the first thing that the working group has to do before it reports in March of next year is to conduct a consultative exercise in order to then inform it about what the views are of the community on co-education. Because surely, the views of the community on the question of co-education is going to be important. It's never paramount. Because I accept that if you have a preponderance of educators that tell the government of the day that co-education is the way forward, and we then have the wherewithal in terms of obviously the bricks and mortar, schooling, etc., that will allow us to deliver on co-education, then that, I believe, is an overriding reason in favour of co-education that should trump the views of certain sectors in society. Which is not what happened in 1974, because the views in fact of parents in 1974 were given a greater weight than indeed the views of other sectors of the community. But indeed, there were other very specific reasons to 1973-1974 why co-education was rejected then. But Mr. Speaker, consultation has to be at the heart of this particular process. It has to come before there is a report by the working. Absolutely. The Honourable Minister said to me, no, it hasn't. And that is precisely the difference. It has to come before the working group report. And Mr. Speaker, we cannot support the amended motion for all those reasons. And I thank members, certainly, and thank members of the House for listening to what I have to say, even though they did their best to interrupt me at every single opportunity. Mr. Speaker, I call for the House to divide and vote on the motion.
I now put the question in the terms of the motion proposed by originally by the Honourable the Leader of the Opposition, and we will take a division.
P.J. Lalani. Yes.
Jay the son.
Yes.
R. M. Clinton.
No.
J. E. Cortez.
Hi.
N. F. Costa.
Hi.
D. A. Peterson. J. J. Garcia. Yes. M. D. Hassan Nowen.
Yes.
A.J. Isola.
Aye.
G.H. Lepuri.
Yes.
S.E. Linares.
Yes.
Alex Yamas.
No.
E.J. Phillips.
No.
F.R. Picardi.
Yes.
E.J. Hayes.
No.
S.J. Sacramento.
Yes.
One member absent. There are 11 votes in favour of the motion as amended, and there are 5 against. The motion as amended is carried by majority.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House be now adjourned until 5 p.m. this afternoon.
The House will recess to 5 this afternoon.